Joyful blessings. This is Kaylin Castell, co-founder of the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School, creator of the Celestial Timings, and co-author of the Shamanic Astrology Handbook. And this is an audio story to inspire you around celebrating birthdays, the solar return, the time when the sun returns to the original position it was in the sky when you were born, happens once each year. The sun comes back to the exact same sign and degree it was at your birthday. Sometimes it'll be the day before, sometimes on the exact day, sometimes the day after. But it creates a magical window and the time of connecting and doing ceremony and intention. And there are certain years where there are actually other things that are happening along with the sun returning to its original position. So every 8 years, Venus returns with the sun at the birthday, within a day or two of the birthday. Every 6 and 7 years, Mercury returns to the same position in the sky it was when you were born. And at age 46 is the closest Mercury return a person will experience in their life, closest to the birthday, to the exact time of the sun return. There's also certain ages when the moon will return with the sun on the birthday, age 19, age 28, age 37, age 46, age 57, age 65, age 76 are some of the times when the moon will return on the birthday. And there's specific reason for that of what's happening in the sky, but ultimately the thing to know is that that's a special, a recapitulation of something that happened at your birth, to have the sun return, to have the moon return, to have Venus return. Also Mars returns with the birthday, at certain times, like age 15, age 32, age 47 is a very precise Mars return, age 79. So the Mars returns are a little fewer and farther between. There's also one at 64 that's worth noting. So again, near the birthday, these are called synodic, meaning they're with the sun. The synodic return means that a planet is returning to the same relationship to the sun in the same sign and degree, at the same time of year, in the same season that it was when you were born. So those birthdays are especially important and potent and powerful. So the story I'm going to tell you is about my age 46 solar return or birthday, and how I had a magical experience at that time through ceremonial intention. But before I tell you that part of the story, I'm going to share with you something that had happened a few years before. In the late 80s, in 1988, it was actually my age 32 birthday, I was going through a very difficult time, lots of trauma in my life. The dissolution of my first marriage, and I had three very small children. I had twins that were 3 years old, and I had a 6-year-old at that time. Well, actually, my twins turned 3 2 days after my 32nd birthday, and then I had an older son who was 6, who is actually 5 and turned 6 in a few months later. And so so I had very young children, and I was in a lot of fear and a lot of panic and very unhappy, very challenging time in my life. And it just so happened that right around that time I was reading a book called Medicine Woman by Lynn Andrews. And she's describing her experience of seeing a medicine basket or some kind of Native American basket. Or maybe it was from the Canadian Native people, the I want to say Indian, but I also don't want to say that. So I don't remember the name of the tribe at this time. But anyway, she bought the basket and somehow it just led her on all these adventures. And she met a medicine woman who taught her all these really amazing things. And it was just one synchronicity after another and just great magic that was happening to her. And it was a great story. So as I was reading the story, I just had this moment where I felt like, that's what I want to experience in my life. all this trauma is, I'm done. I don't want to be doing that anymore. So I had a strong intention right around my birthday, but I wasn't aware of the power of intention at that time. I also wasn't aware of the power of ceremony at that time. Although I was aware of consciousness and making choices and, you know, I had been on a spiritual path my whole life, basically born to parents who were Rosicrucians and who taught me all kinds of different things. And I always asked very, deep questions. I was always interested in how time worked and, you know, how things worked with God and, you know, if God was creating the world, then who created God? Because it seemed to me somebody had to create God. So at, you know, age 3, 4, 5, and 6, I would be asking these kinds of questions. And my parents didn't always know how to answer them. So I was, even though I had a difficult childhood, I did have the gift of having parents who had a spiritual basis that I could tune into and ask these kinds of questions and not be shamed for being curious about them. So, in fact, I remember it being like 3, 4 years old and my parents going to the Rosicrucian Temple in California. And I remember being in that temple, even though I haven't been back since I was that age. Very profound, you know, sort of magical things that I got to experience as a child, even though to me they just seem like an everyday kind of thing. So I set this intention at my 32nd birthday, not realizing and not knowing anything about shamanic astrology or working with the cycles or working with the solar return, doing ceremony. I didn't know any of that, but I set this intention, and within 2 years, I was introduced to shamanic astrology. And, you know, my life began to change in dramatic ways. In fact, the following year, it changed very dramatically, and I got divorced, and I was on a new path for a new life at that particular time. And then the next year, shamanic astrology came into my life. And I knew that it was something that I had to know. So from there, I got introduced to something called the Awakening, the Priestess Process Within. That happened in 1995. And I went through the initiation and a 9-month process to awaken the priestess within me and to awaken the ceremonial part of myself to a greater extent, because I always had some part of that as part of who I was, but I just was able to be more conscious with it. And I learned how to set intentions through ceremony, and also to have the support of having women who are into the same thing, and learned so much. Just incredible magic happened around all of that. So fast forward to 2002 on my 46th birthday, and I knew that this was a sun-moon return on my 46th birthday. I also knew it was the closest Mercury return of my life, and I decided that I was going to honor this particular birthday and do a ceremonial hike. And I went by myself. I chose the tallest mountain in the Tucson Mountains, to hike, and it was a 9-mile round trip hike, a 2,000 foot climb. What I didn't know when I chose the hike was that it was also the only mountain in the Tucson Mountains that was 4,600 feet, a little bit more than 4,600, about 4,600, 325 or something. But 4,600 feet is the main number. And I, after I got down from the mountain, from the top of the mountain, and I saw that it was 4,600 feet, I was like, oh, how perfect. And what a, another confirmation for the magic that I had just experienced on my hike on in, and I'm going to share that in just a minute. So what I want to and sort of preface this by saying is that the story is intended to inspire you who are listening to this to also take your time of your birthday to set intentions. Because it can be so incredibly powerful, and it can be actually life-changing. And that's actually what happened for me. At age 32, I set an intention, didn't even really realize that was what I was doing, and my life completely changed from that point forward. And then again, at other birthdays, I set intentions. But my age 46, I had a most remarkable experience. So as I prepare for my hike, I decided to take some cornmeal and tobacco as an offering to give to the mountain. And I put some in my hand as I started up the trail, and I started doing intentions. I was asking for guidance and support to navigate a very difficult situation that had come to my awareness. I did not know that, you know, there was some deep traumatic issues that had happened in my husband's life. And I had just found out about him. We'd been married for 12 years, and I was absolutely stunned and shocked and didn't know what to do with that. And I had just found out about a month before my 46th birthday. So I was asking for guidance and support of how to navigate that particular time, what to do, how could I support him, how could I help him to heal some of these traumatic issues that it would, and I also realized that somehow this was very key to understanding some things that happened to me in my life. So I was asking for support around all of that. I was asking for support on how to best, you know, support my children, who at that time, my youngest child was 12, and I had my twins were 17. They turned 17 2 days later, I guess. And then my oldest would have been 19 at the time, but he was still living at home. So I was wanting to figure out how to, you know, best navigate this whole situation that had come to light, as well as to further my own growth and my own work in the world and my sacred work that I was growing at that particular time. And so I did all these prayers and asked for healing and guidance and support, and it just went on and on. And I did this for a couple miles. I was everything I could think of and everybody I could think of to call on, and all of the guardian angels and beings of light, master teachers and guides that could show up to help me. And then I was giving gratitude also for all of the help and support and all the different wonders in my life that I was experiencing at that time, and the great work I get to do in the world, and how grateful I was for my amazing children, and for the opportunities that were before me to grow and to change and evolve, even though I knew that it was probably going to be challenging to go forward. So with all of that, I then offered the tobacco and the cornmeal to the earth, and made an offering and gave gratitude and was continuing to say thank you as I hiked on up the trail. And one of the things I've learned to do is to watch for synchronicities. I have done ceremonies. I've done ceremonial hikes where I've then seen Gila monsters as an answer to my question. And they're very rare to see, but I have seen them. That has happened to me 4 times living in the Arizona desert. And I've seen hawks show up and do unusual things. I've seen eagles. I actually have seen 2 eagles. One bald eagle that showed up as I was doing a walk in the desert and doing some ceremonial intentions and prayers. And that actually happened around the same year that I had this experience. And then I had seen a golden eagle about a year before. this particular time. So lots of magic has happened. And I've seen, and when I saw the eagles, I was in Tucson, I was in the city, which is very unusual to see them in the city. So I knew that these were huge messages for me. So I always pay attention to the messages that show up and watch for signs in the world of form to see that my intentions are being acted on and that the universe is responding and giving me a message to let me know that that's happening. So as I was walking along, I looked down on the trail. I just happened to look down and I saw, it was about maybe 2 or 3 inches long. It looked like a children's toy that somebody had dropped on the trail. It was pink in color. And I thought that was kind of unusual. And we sneeze on the truth, I guess. So so I guess what I'm saying here is something definitely worth paying attention to. And what I thought was a children's toy, but it looked to me like a lion leaping. But I thought I better pick it up and see what it is because my eyesight isn't as good as it used to be. So I reached down to pick it up, and it was cold and squishy, and it was like kind of slippery and cold. And I was like, oh, not a children's toy. And I kind of jumped back, and I was like, that was a little animal of some kind. So I started walking up the trail as fast as I could, and I was doing chants to honor the passing of this little being, whatever it had been. And I was walking fast and chanting, and I, for one of maybe two times in my life, I heard a voice, and it said, "Stop, go back." I'm like, what? No, I only have 4 hours to make this 9-mile trek up 2,000 feet. I can't go back. And then I just heard the voice again say, "Stop, go back." And I was like, oh man. So I turned around and I went back, and it took me a little while to find the spot because actually I walked past it and found my offering, and then I was able to find it coming back the other way. And I bent down and I looked at it, and it was, it was a little baby rabbit, like it had been aborted beside the trail. It didn't have any fur. It was just, pink skin, and it had little ears pressed back and little rabbit feet. And I was like, oh, a little baby bunny that was aborted beside the trail. It never really got a chance to live. And so I, without thinking, I had a rock and I started digging a hole, and I pushed the little baby rabbit in the hole, and I put some tobacco and cornmeal and was singing more chants and prayers to the little baby, and was covering it up and putting a rock cairn on top of it. And again, not thinking like, oh, I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do that. Just being in the moment and being guided. And then it occurred to me to put a stick to mark the cairn so that I'd be able to find it when I came back. And so I stood up and I looked around, and I found the inside of a cholla that all the cactus spines had fallen off of. It was just the perfect size, about 3 feet long. And I reached down to pick it up, and I turned around, and there was a man standing in front of me. He was elderly. He had a staff in his hand, like a wizard's staff. I kid you not. I was like totally surprised. He had white hair and a white beard, nicely trimmed. It wasn't like a Gandalf long beard, but it was a nicely trimmed beard. And he had on a hat that looked very much like a wizard's hat, but it was a hiking hat, but it looked like a wizard's hat. And I saw him and I jumped back and was like, ah, startled. And he said, I was trying not to scare you. And I said, yeah, that didn't work. And so I'm standing there holding this stick in my hand, and I'm realizing I've got it held up like I could hit him with it, because when I jumped back, I leaped back with the stick, and I was holding it up pretty high. And I thought, well, maybe I need to explain to him what I'm doing, because I'm not really going to hit him with a stick. I said, I found this baby bunny that had been aborted by the trail. I was made this little grave and this little rock cairn, and I was going to just put the stick in it. And I stepped up and put the stick in, and he's listening to my story, and he says, well, There are two possibilities for that baby bunny. One is that it could go into the belly of another animal, or it could go into the belly of the earth. And it looks like it's in the belly of the earth. I was like, huh, yeah, pretty good point. I hadn't really thought about it. I was just going by what I was feeling guided to do. And then he stood there for a long moment and looked at the rock cairn and the stick and, you know, my little marking of the grave. And he said, I'll remember this when I come back, and wished me good day and headed down the trail. And I was like, whoa. So then I started up the trail, and I knew I needed to like speed up my hiking process because I had a short amount of time. I had to get up and down. I was hiking as fast as I could, and I decided to call my husband, Jeff, at the time, and tell him what had just happened to me. I'm like, the weirdest thing just happened. I did these prayers. I made all these intentions, and then I found this little baby bunny that I buried beside the trail, and in the medicine cards, rabbit represents fear. And so Jeff said, oh, so you were burying your fear beside the trail. And I was like, yeah, I was. I hadn't even thought of that. And then the man comes along, this wizard looking man comes along and scares me. So interesting, like the whole fear factor thing. And also just something to know in the medicine cards, part of the fear, the story of Rabbit, who originally was a brave and fearless warrior, is that he makes friends with a sorceress or a witch, somebody who does magic and who turns a leaf into water so that the rabbit can have a drink, and turns a stone into food so the rabbit can eat. And then when the rabbit's hurt, uses magic to help heal the rabbit, and the rabbit becomes very fearful and says, I don't want to be friends with you anymore because you use magic. And so then the rabbit winds up being fearful. And so this is really connected to some of the things that I've been working with, because I feel like magic, it's time for magic to come back into the world, that we have been trained and taught to be afraid of magic. And magic is around us all the time. And literally, I had just had this magical experience of the odds. I have hiked a lot, and I've never seen a baby bunny by the trail before or since that time. I have hiked a lot, and never have I encountered someone. I mean, I've encountered lots of other people hiking on the trail, but never someone with a staff and a white trimmed beard and that had this whole wizard kind of presence about them. So actually, I shared this with my priestess sisters, and one of them said, oh, you met the Wizard of the Mountain. And I was like, yeah, I kind of felt that way. I feel like I did. So when I got home, I decided to look up and find out more about rabbit medicine, because it's also connected to the goddess Venus, the planet Venus, representing the goddess or the feminine, the divine feminine principle. And our holiday, Easter, is actually named after a goddess whose name was Eostar, and her totem was a bunny or a rabbit. So we have the Easter bunny, and it represents sexuality and fertility. And of course, that was one of the things that when the monotheistic religions of our current time were trying to do away with the power of the divine feminine, and so they changed Easter, which means when the sun is rising in the east at the spring, Easter, Eostar, that was her time of year, her power time of year. So it got changed from the celebration of the goddess to the celebration of the crucifixion and resurrection, Easter. But there's more ancient traditions that it actually predated it. And the Easter bunny, which has to do, again, with fertility and abundance and plenty, is connected to that. So I was like, okay, so that's another piece. What does this mean? What is this about? Well, as I was doing more research on the internet, up pops a website from the Rosicrucians. Now, you remember I told you that my parents were Rosicrucians, and I did Rosicrucian studies. Like as a child, they would sit with me and do these little Rosicrucian lessons. And I think we went to some children's Rosicrucian things when I was a kid. That was part of the upbringing that I had. And so I was startled to see that the Rosicrucians have something called the Mountain of Initiation, and that there are seven stages of initiation. And that represents, that's connected to the seven visible planets that starts with Venus. And there is a threshold guardian. The first threshold guardian you encounter is the old man. And that at that gateway, there is a rabbit. There's also a hen, but there's the rabbit and the old man. I was like, oh my gosh, the first initiation, the first level of initiation on the Mountain of Initiation, according to the Rosicrucians, is the encounter with the rabbit and the old man. And I was climbing the mountain, and it was an initiation. And also, it was my Mercury return. And one of the things we understand in the Mercury cycle is that there is a phase of the cycle where Mercury is a guardian of the threshold of initiation. And Hermes, who is also Mercury in Greek myth, as the guardian of the crossroads. And interestingly, the Rosicrucians connect the Mountain of Initiation to the Emerald Tablets. And the Emerald Tablets are connected to Hermes, the Emerald Tablets of Hermes, or the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, who was the Egyptian form of Hermes and Mercury. And so a few years before, I'd had this huge initiation and connection to the Emerald Tablets that had happened in 1998, right after my mother died. And I was given a copy of the Emerald Tablets. And in that was connected to a council of 12 and 1. And the key number of the Emerald Tablets is 12. The key number of the Mountain of Initiation is 7. The 7 visible planets. There's just synchronicity upon synchronicity. And interestingly, that time did catapult me into an initiation and a complete changing of my life. Also that year, 2002, I was invited to do a radio show. I did for several weeks. I was invited to do a video of the, not a video. Well, it turned into a video, I guess, but it was a cable TV show. And so I was given this opportunity to become more visible, to have my voice out into the world more at that time. And many other events and sort of magical synchronicities happened as a result of having taken the time to place my intention for magic, for greater magic to happen in my life, and to align myself with my soul's intent and to ask for guidance and support. And I got immediate feedback from the universe, and that I got this powerful initiation that happened. So I invite you all to take time to engage your own solar return with intention, in whatever way works for you. And there's no one way to do it. There's many ways that you can engage this kind of powerful, just honoring of your solar return, and specifically ones at special ages that are representative of opportunities for our soul to grow, for our own growth and evolution, and to create greater magic in our life. So I hope this was inspiring. I hope it's helpful. And I just want to close with a passage from the Emerald Tablets that was gifted to me in 1998, and connected to the Council of 12 and 1. And I found this passage again, kind of sort of magically, that came to me. And it is, the opening line is something like, how do I, how do I get to Shambhala? And that's the place of, it's truly a place of magic, if you ask me. And the answer is, open thou the way of the 12 and the 1, so I may pass into the realm of wisdom. And the 12 and 1 is us, the 12 archetypes, the 12 signs, the 12 seasons, and we are the one that integrates it all. So when we can integrate that 12 into to the oneness of who we are, then we do pass into the realm of wisdom.